How does my pride affect where I will spend eternity? Find out today on Changed by Grace. Welcome to Changed by Grace. I'm Pastor Steve Herford. We're addressing the problem for every sinner. This problem is so great that it affects where one will spend eternity. You ask, well, what is the problem? I thought all I had to do was believe. Well, let's answer that question today as we look to the Word of God for the answer.
Well, notice that second passage. That second passage, that second definition in chapter 27, verse 2. Actually, the second passage was over in 25, verse 27. It says, it's not good to eat much honey, so to seek one's own glory is not glory. And then the first one was about not exalting yourself. You know, all of those play into the same understanding as Proverbs 27, 2. Go ahead and look there. Because when you're talking about seeking your own glory, this is really what you're saying. You're praising yourself. You're praising yourself. It says, let another man praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. See, this really gets to the heart of the matter. And the example I want to use for this is found over in Daniel 4. If you choose, you can just listen to as I read it, where it talks about Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar walks through his palace, and he says this in verse 30. He says, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? It's like that song that New Song wrote years ago. I don't know if you've even heard of it. But it goes like this. I, me, my, mine. Four words that spell decline. I, me, my, mine. That's pride. And it says, while the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom has departed from you, and they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. That very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. You ever seen that in the Guinness World Book of Records? People with long fingernails. Doesn't that just make you... When I go into a store and, you know, ladies there typing into the computer to pay for something, she's got these long fingernails. Her fingers don't even touch the keys. It's all nails. I'm going, I bet it's kind of hard to type the right way. It's easy to peck like that, you know. But look at this. Look at what happened to him. God humbled him. God humbled him in a very, very interesting way here. And all because of his pride. 2 Corinthians 10:12 says that this attitude is certainly not wise. If it wasn't wise for Nebuchadnezzar, it's certainly not wise for any of us. And he tells us, he says, we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. But they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. Did you hear that? Don't class yourself or compare yourself with those who run around commending themselves. They're a measurement of themselves. They use themselves for their own standards. J. Vernon McGee says, Paul's injecting a little note of humor. A great many folk compare themselves among themselves, which is the reason that many people in our churches think they have arrived. They feel that they are really fine, outstanding spiritual Christians because they compare themselves with other Christians in their group. That is not the yardstick we are to use, my friend. This is one of the tragedies of the hour. Person can be in a cold church and grow cold himself and yet not be conscious of it because he compares himself with the cold Christians around him. So Paul says, We don't have anything to do with anything like this because it's foolish. There in verse 18, he says, "For not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends." In other words, the Lord is the standard, not ourselves, not anyone else. We must measure ourselves by that standard, not by any other. This is the truth, but pride certainly doesn't let it be so. In fact, pride works in this way. You hear something like that, and 2 seconds later, you've already forgotten it. That's how damaging it is. It'll continue to cause you to want to praise yourself, to measure your life on the life of others, to look at others, to compare yourselves. Warren Wiersbe makes some pretty good insights at this point, he says. In his personal examination of the seven churches named in Revelation 2 and 3, the Lord Jesus measured them far differently than they measured themselves. The church that thought it was poor, he considered to be rich. And the church that boasted of its wealth, he declared to be poor. Some people measure ministry only by statistics. While it's true that the early church did take note of numbers, it is also true that uniting with the church at that time was a much more difficult and dangerous thing. He says some years ago, one of America's large denominations had its theme, a million more in 64, and everyone a tither. He said, I heard one of their leaders, one of their leading preachers comment, if we get a million more like the last million, God help us. Wiersbe says, quantity is no guarantee of quality. The Judaizers were great on measuring their ministry because a religion of external activities is much easier to measure than one of internal transformation. I agree with that. And I think probably by now many of you would agree with that as well. We've seen this church full. We've seen this church empty. You know, and to walk around and say, numbers? You know, yeah, I'm interested in people. I'm interested in God having people in here, but I'm also interested in God saving people, and I'm interested in those who are in here are being transformed in their heart by the Word of God. That's what I'm interested in. See, what happens when you live your life like this? You begin to despise others who do not meet up to your standard. In Luke 18, Jesus gave this parable of some who trusted in themselves, that they were righteous and they despised others. He said this, two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. And the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. He prayed to himself. And I'm not talking about silently, you know, where you just pray in your heart. No, he's praying to himself. And he says, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. Apparently they were in the same room. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And then the scene shifts over to the tax collector. The tax collector, Jesus says, he was standing afar off. He would not so much as raise his eyes up to heaven, but he beat his breast. And he said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And then Jesus, comparing the two, he says, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So seeking one's own glory, praising yourself, that's a couple definitions for pride. Let me give you another one. And that is forgetting God and His grace. Forgetting God and His grace. Thomas Manton, he said, this is certainly pride. For it is a lifting up of the heart above God and against God and without God. Deuteronomy 8:11 gives us a good example of this, where this chapter tells us that Moses, when he was giving the law to the second generation, to those who were to go up and possess the land, he was trying to tell them that you need to give your heart to the law of God or you're going to forget God. Even back in chapter 6 of Deuteronomy, go ahead and look there with me. He tells them that it's extremely important that you love the Lord your God, verse 5, with all your heart, with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. He says, these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. And then it shall come about when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you eat and are satisfied, then watch yourself, get this, that you do not forget the Lord who brought you from the land of Egypt out of the house of slavery. You shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship him and swear by his name. So we have to be careful, even in the midst of our need. I mean, think about this. What if God does take away all the financial burden this church has? You know what the temptation would be? To forget God. That's what he's saying right here. I would honestly admit to say this, so I just said the same thing twice. I would say this, that at least with the problem there, it forces you to pray. It forces you to go to him. And really, that's what any trial should do anyway, right? Seeking one's own glory, praising yourself, forgetting God and his grace, they're all good reasons for dealing with the sin of pride in your life. But probably the greatest definition of pride is simply this. Look at Proverbs 21 and verse 4. Proverbs 21, 4. It says, a haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin. Just simple enough. Pride's sin. This is really what kept those Jews from committing their life to Jesus, from believing that he was the I Am. When they said they believed, it was only verbal assent. It wasn't a surrender of life, it wasn't a commitment of life. See, these two qualities or attitudes are literally lifting up of the eyes. It's haughtiness, it's pride, it's an extensiveness of the heart, which is really an idiomatic expression for arrogance. John Gill says, the man that looks above others and with disdain upon them shows that pride reigns in him and swells his mind with a vain opinion of himself. So you must understand that pride is sin no matter how you look at it, whether it's in a haughty look or a proud heart. And it's a sin, according to Psalm 101 and verse 5, that will not go unpunished. It says, whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. So that leads me to the dangers of pride, the dangers of it. What are its dangers? How can you avoid it before it happens? Well, I believe first you need to understand what pride is and what pride is doing in the heart. And because it's the seeking of one's own glory and praising yourself and forgetting about God and his grace, it's going to stir some things up. Listen to what it stirs up. First, it stirs up strife and contention. Strife and contention. Proverbs 28:25. He who is of a proud heart stirs up strife. And then it says in Proverbs 13:10, by pride comes nothing but strife. What is strife? Strife is contention, discord. John Gill again says, the one with a proud heart could refer to one with a large heart or has an enlarged one, not with useful knowledge and understanding as Solomon had, nor heart enlarged with love and affection to the souls of men as the Apostle Paul had. but either has a covetous one who enlarges its desire as hell, is never satisfied with what he has, and is so continually contending with his neighbors, engaging in lawsuits for their property, or unwilling to pay his lawful debts, or of a proud spirit and despises all around him and cannot bear opposition and contradiction, and is of a wrathful and revengeful spirit and always at variance with his neighbors and quarreling with him. See, if you're stirring up strife, you need to recognize it's actually coming from the pride that's in your heart. And that's sin. You know, it's interesting this morning. I mean, I was really struggling this morning, I'll be honest with you. I'm out there trying to get, I'm thinking, you know, the night before they were talking about snow. And there was nothing. I mean, the windshields didn't have ice on them. I go out this morning, there's ice everywhere. I look at the roof of my house, it looked like snow. It was white. And I'm out there trying to get it off the windshield, the car, and I'm trying to straighten up the car because I want to set a good impression on Snyder because he was riding with us and didn't want him to really see how slobby-ish we really can be. The kids, really, the kids, you know, they mess up the car too. And they're responsible for the back where you were. And, I'm out there doing that, and it's not an easy thing to do with a tie on. You know, something around your neck. And sometimes, you know, we have a radio program that's on at 8:30, and sometimes I'll turn it on just to make sure they're playing it or playing the right one. And I happened to turn it on, and the passage that it was covering this morning was from James chapter 1, verses 13 to 17, called "Whose Fault Is Our Temptation?" Now, I just had a little meltdown out there, okay? Nobody saw it but me. Maybe my neighbor was looking through the window going, he's having a meltdown. And, you couldn't tell, really. It's all inside my heart till I threw something. And but anyway, I happened to hear a statement I said on that recording, and I just, it's like, well, there you go, right there. Right out of my own mouth was I condemned for what I was doing. Because the point in the passage was, who are we blaming for our sin? And the passage is not talking about a direct blame. It's talking about doing it remotely. I never said while I was out there, God, you're responsible for this. I never said out there any kind of accusing of God, but you know what? While I was angry and when I threw something, I really was saying that. I knew what that passage said, and all that did was just remind me of it. By the way, it was a good reminder. You know, and of course, that wasn't the only thing that happened this morning. Just a major struggle. And I'm telling you that because I don't know why I'm telling you that. Other than to say, we all have those days. I happen to have mine this morning. And all that pride did was stir up more things in my heart. You know, when you finally humble yourself, you finally let it go, you finally give up on it, there's peace. There's peace. I told my wife last night, I said, I'm not going to sleep with the boys tonight. I'm tired of laying down with them. I want to sleep in my own bed all night. Well, they cried for about 10 minutes, and I was in the bed with them. I fell asleep. I got up sometime in the night, went and got in my bed, and that's when the other happened. It's like they follow me in there. And I woke up this morning just thinking, well, that didn't work. And then I was thinking also, those guys aren't going to be that young. I mean, Jeremy, Naomi, and Kara don't go, hey, will you come? We sleep in your bed? Or, I mean, they don't do any of that, right? Get out of my room. All it is pride, folks. That's all it is. And when we don't want to admit a struggle, that's pride. We don't want to admit a problem, that's pride. Are we too proudful to say to one another? Am I too proudful as a preacher to say to somebody, I've struggled today, I fell today, I'm having a struggle right now? Is there so much pride mounted up right there that you can't say that? Well, look at another danger. Let's look at a couple more. The first one is it stirs up strife and contention. The second one is is it doesn't seek after God. It doesn't seek after God. It hinders you from doing that. And that's exactly really what was going on in John chapter 8 with these religious leaders. Their pride would not let them investigate the true claims of Jesus to really try to understand who he was and what he was saying. Nicodemus humbled himself, even though he came to Jesus at night, trying to cover up what he was doing. But he did come. I give him certainly credit for that, wouldn't you? These other guys would not even come. The only talking that they were doing about Jesus was how they might destroy him. So pride causes strife and contention, then it cannot cause one to seek after God. It actually does the very opposite. Psalm 10:4 says, "The wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts." None of his thoughts. What a blow to the seeker-sensitive movement that says, listen, you can seek after God. It says the wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. Why? Because God is not in any of his thoughts. I mean, were you running around seeking after God? You might say, well, at one point I was. Well, the true issue was is that he was seeking you. Well, it's just like Romans 3:11 that says there's none who seeks after God. The one who really is the seeker is God. And so the dangers of pride, it stirs up strife, it stirs up contention, it doesn't seek after God. And it just kind of continues in a downward spiral because it leads to the worship of idols, it leads to destruction, it leads to disobedience. Moses said in Deuteronomy 8:19, "Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroys before you, so you shall perish, because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God." See, what would lead them to forget the Lord your God and follow after other gods and serve and worship them would be their pride. It would be their pride. Fourth danger, God doesn't tolerate it. In fact, he hates it. Two verses, Psalm 101, verse 5. It says, "Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy, and the one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure." And the second passage is Proverbs 6, verse 16. Where he talks about these six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. And then he begins to list them. What's he say? A proud look. Well, that does bring some problems, doesn't it? It certainly does. And what do you do about it? I mean, how do you really deal with this in your life? Because God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. So how do you deal with this? You've got to humble yourself. I mean, it's just straight out. You've got to humble yourself. It's like Spurgeon said, you could humble yourself or you could be humbled. Which would you choose? I think I would choose humbling myself. See, pride brings with it destruction. And pride itself will be destroyed. So how do you keep from experiencing the destruction of that? Well, again, you have to kill it. You have to mortify. You have to put to death the deeds of your body. You have to fight with it with all your might. And if someone points it out to you, don't get mad at them. Thank them. Thank the Lord that he did that. Don't mount up with pride and throw up your wall of defenses and justify your actions. That's just making it deeper. I was thankful this morning that I confronted myself through the radio program. I didn't have somebody walk outside and say something to me. How do you deal with it? Here's you a few steps on how to deal with it. Proverbs 30, verse 32 says this, If you have been foolish in exalting yourself, or if you have devised evil, here's a very practical response. Put your hand on your mouth. If you're out there boasting, you're out there seeking your own glory, trying to get everybody to look at you, you're trying to get all this attention, and you're doing it verbally, he says, just put your hand over your mouth. Stop speaking. Secondly, confess it as sin. Proverbs 28:13. He who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy. Recognize that it's sin. And then third, humble yourself. James 4:10, humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. So he says, put your hand on your mouth, confess this as sin, and humble yourself. Repent. That's really what these people needed to do in John 8. But they didn't humble themselves. No, they continued to exalt themselves. And they continued to persecute the one who could truly bring about a destruction of this in their life.
Pride is an area that we all struggle with, and it's certainly a problem today. And the question is this something that has kept you back from committing your life to Jesus Christ? Not only is it unbelief, but it's pride. And this is what usually holds us back. This also is what hinders us as believers. Our pride gets in the way. We're selfish. We're not looking at others more important than ourselves, as Philippians 2 tells us. But it's all hindering us even now. And I want to encourage you today just to deal with this in your life. Put it aside. Put it away. But don't think that this thing will never show back up, because it constantly seeks to show its ugly head. You've been listening today to a message called The Problem for Every Sinner. And this certainly is a problem, isn't it? And this is a study on pride and unbelief. And we want to make it available to you today on CD. All you have to do is call us at 904-651-3351, and we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this. Again, this is on one full-length audio CD. Now, if you'd like to download the MP3, you can do that for free from our website. Just visit www.changedbygrace.org. Well, I'm Pastor Steve Herford. I want to thank you for listening, and I want to take the opportunity to tell you that this is a ministry of Changed by Grace Community Church. We're located at 49 North Boland Street in Jacksonville. Hope you'll join us this morning at 10 o'clock for worship. Hope to see you then.